Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.
Point of View.
Discussing the world around you.
On the street.
On the air.
And at kaya959.co.za.
Thank you so much for staying with us. We saw a report from Biggie Caesar earlier on today, and they had really written a wonderful article, worrying though, on what South Africa may need. And this is a calculation by the Department of Health, calculating that 2.82 billion rand is needed to plug the gap for the reset of what, as you remember, of the programs that that needed to be continued upon the withdrawal of funds by the U.S. administration. USAID, you remember, pulled out of some programs in South Africa as well as in other parts of the continent as well. And when they roughly look at what kind of money would be required to plug this gap, we're looking at about 2.82 billion rand. But it's not that simple. I have on the line a senior researcher at Hero. That's Dr. Lisa Jemison. Thank you so much, Dr. Jemison, for talking to us. Good evening and welcome.
Hi, good evening.
How do I pronounce your first name?
It's Lisa.
Okay. All right. Okay. I wasn't sure that I was, pronouncing it correctly, but thank you so much for talking to us. Talk to us maybe first about HERO. What is HERO? I know it's spelled really interesting with a two, H-E-2-R-O. What is HERO?
So HERO stands for Health Economics and Epidemiology Research Office. It's quite a mouthful. Mm-hmm. But we do exactly what's in the name. So we sort of work at the intersection of both epidemiology, which is the study of diseases. Most of our focus has been on HIV, TB, and COVID, and a few smaller other disease areas we've focused on. But those have been the bigger ones. And then health economics, which is, of course, the study of the costs of health and what implications these have, you know, in the medium and short and long term as well.
Mm. And so let's talk a little bit about where we are right now. So obviously when the U.S. government told everybody around the world that they're going to be pulling back some of the funding, we were also very much affected by U.S. aid funding being withdrawn, and it was immediate. And I know some didn't get letters, but payment stopped all funds.
Essentially, the funding next front and a lot of
CDC funding. Ding.
But yes, no, I believe on
to the 2.8 billion, and I know some of it is the shortfall.
Mm-hmm. And yes, I think it's for HIV and TB research. To what the Department of Health are doing, you know, we're approaching it from it of the PEPFAR funding, funding. Predicting the future, but we can somehow estimate the methods, you know, how effective some of these interventions are, and like I said, we can't predict the future, but you know, these models, and what we have done at HERO is estimate the cost of the HIV program. So this is not just. I mean, it includes salaries of very, you know, it's very specific activities. So giving someone treatment or doing an HIV test and, you know, the amount of people it covers just for those specific activities. And so it's a different type of estimation, very much related to exactly what is needed to treat someone or to give someone an HIV test. And those are the costs that we've produced and the impact that, you know, we have modeled over 20 years.
And what do those costs look like based on those projections?
I'm trying to, you know, I've got these numbers in front of me and they're in US dollars, but yes. to give you an amount, we're saying at a minimum, if we are just the reduction in the PEPFAR defunding, we are saying will cost the South African government an additional $700 million over a four-year period. Mm-hmm. So I guess you can maybe do the calculations to figure out what it costs per year and see if it, you know, it looks similar. But again, this includes the cost of HIV treatment.
Yes.
It includes the drugs, the lab tests, the HIV tests. So it's a slightly different angle, but it also aims to be informative in this regard.
And you're also looking, as you said, you know, you're not trying to predict the future, but a sense of when you look at previous data, it gives you a sense of how many new infections each year roughly we have
right.
in the country.
Right.
And, exactly. and, you know, when you look at annually how we've been growing with new infections, it's sort of you're working on on those numbers.
Exactly. Exactly. And we can, you know, we know that we have an estimated 140,000 new HIV infections every year, around 40,000 AIDS-related deaths every year.
Mm.
And then with us modeling, what we can say is, well, if the PEP or at least these program and the programs drop by, you know, a certain amount because of the PEP body funding, and the South African government doesn't step in, which we know they are doing, but, you know, sort of worst case, we're looking at like 150 to 300 new HIV infections over the next 4 years. So it's not annual, but over the 4 years, or around 60,000 new AIDS-related deaths over the next four-year period. And we say 4 years just because, we kind of look at the medium term. We've also obviously got annual estimates of this, this is just how we sort of looked at it for this work specifically.
This is not a political question, but I think you'll understand what I'm saying. That,
right.
you know, we almost hopeful in a way, depending on where we are politically with the US, that perhaps it is possible to save the CDC program if there is political intervention. So he would have to, this is Trump's administration, they would have to look at that budget and almost decide again whether this can continue or not.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm somewhat of an optimist. This is maybe a bit of my downfall, and I do hope it doesn't all, you know, go down. I think we're in a somewhat of a desperate situation where we really need the support, and so it would be a tragedy if we lost it.
And maybe the reason I'm asking you this is that maybe there is a chance that, you know, for whatever reason, things work out and at least we can save this CDC program. And therefore, you'll then be able to explain what is going to happen after September. Maybe, you know, we don't have to panic as much with at least the CDC program.
Yeah, I want to say that, but as big as the CDC support has been, a lot of it was under PEPFAR, and a lot of damage has already been done because of the sudden defunding. Clinics had to close overnight, essentially, and thousands of nurses who were supported by some of the implementation partners like Inova and such had just overnight had to stop the work, and some of the clinics were working in absolutely critical areas where, especially related to what we call key populations. And there doesn't seem to be as much support from the U.S. government for those populations going forward. So, you know, even if the CDC was seen to you, I'm not sure what mandate they might have to support those populations specifically. I can't speak for them, but I'm optimistic, but it's terrible.
You know, again, I'm hesitant because I don't want to ask you a political question, which I know you'll be reluctant to answer, but the sense I get, listen to the reporting by the department as well as, higher ends like the deputy president's office, for instance, he specifically made pronouncements of this, is that not panicking, if you understand what I'm saying. So the tone from them is that we will be able to plug the hole. On the other hand, when I listen to civil society, I get a very different picture where they are dancing on a disaster almost, and that they are concerned, even though there is commitment from government, that perhaps it's not that those monies are not being released quickly enough, or those budgets have not been committed to enough, and it's not happening quickly enough. What's your sense? And as I said, I'm not asking you to pronounce on a political, but maybe the reality of where you sit with the work that you do.
Right. I mean, you know, I'm somewhat, I don't know if I can answer this. I'm fortunate enough to be somewhat shielded against some of this, at least in the meantime, because of the type of work that I do. My opinion is that I think both things can be true. I think government could be doing enough, as well as, you know, the civil society's concerns that they might not be doing enough at all, especially in some areas. It's hard to know exactly, and lots of people are evaluating it, and there will always be this push and pull of course. You know, yeah. we're doing enough, no you're not. And this is exactly, you know, the role of civil society as well, to, you know, to keep an eye on these things and make sure, you know, things are being done as they should and no one is left behind. I think it is a huge task at hand that our government has, and I don't know if there will be a perfect solution to any of this. I think we're all just sort of, you know, holding our hands together and trying to get through it as best we can as research organizations.
From what government says, it's probably about two. They were saying about 2% of the government's own programs is what has gone missing. About 2%. The figures obviously vary. How easy will it be to plug the hole? And I know we haven't got commitments yet. And of course, we've gone through a whole new budget process. This country knows what we've been doing. So everybody understands the delays. But, you know, how easy will it be to plug this hole?
I can't speak for government. I don't know. I'm not on the inside. I am aware that there has been substantial changes to the budget in order to support the HIV program more carefully, but I can't answer for exactly of how easy or how hard it is going to be. I think at the current economic climate, and I think it is going to be hard, no matter what we think.
Dr. Jimison, from your past experience in global trends, is there anywhere else, apart from our own reliance in our own government, where this money may come or this kind of support may come from?
One of the things we have, but I'm sure this has been spoken about, is, you know, besides government, you know, we're wondering to what extent the private sector need to come back on board. You know, the private sector were really on board in the early stages of the HIV epidemic and supporting, you know, you can imagine like the mining industry, for example, is a good example of how they, you know, supported their own staff through HIV programs and getting on treatment in the very, very early days, some of it even before ARV rollout. And we sort of sitting at a crossroads now where, you know, we actually might need that support again, not just from the mining industry, but from all other kinds of industries. And of course, this only to some extent serves those who are employed. So we kind of need to also, you know, in a country with large unemployment, we also need to think of ways how, how private sector can possibly come on board to help sustain our HIV program and TB program and any other, you know, dire health program that's been affected by the PEP body funding.
We are hearing murmurs of the fact that the government is in talks with, you know, pharmaceutical companies. Do you think the pricing and discussions around pricing of these drugs is something that is possibly going to maybe help with trying to alleviate some of the pressure?
I'm not part of those discussions, but what I can say is, antiretroviral treatment, the drugs that the South African government used, you know, we've got quite a large negotiating power around these drugs, and the prices of these drugs are really low. Yeah. I think because of our large HIV ART program. I think it costs around, just over 1,000 rand per person for an entire year of antiretroviral treatment.
Yeah.
It's kind of everything else around it. So the cost of a nurse and the cost of lab monitoring and these things that might add. But I feel like it's, you know, there might be some solution in there where, you know, like I said, whether it could come on board and support some of these, whether it's, you know, the company support staff or, you know, I'm not an entrepreneur in this sense.
It's a tough one, yeah.
I think there might be some more creative ways, but, you know, I do think there is maybe a social responsibility for private sector to assist in helping the staff. And, you know, from our side as a health economist, maybe our contribution to all of this is to help build a business case for it, to show companies how it's worth their while in order to invest in this endeavor.
May I just say that listening to you, you sound like you're willing yourself to be optimistic. I don't know.
I am.
And it's a difficult position, but I mean, thank you for explaining it all to us. And obviously, we'll keep an eye on it. And thank you for the work that you do there in your unit at WITS. Thank you very much for talking to us as well.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Yeah, that's a senior researcher at HERO, Dr. Lisa Jimison. Just really trying to help us understand the issue of what we've lost in the PEPFAR program that we no longer have, and some of the support that we used to get from the US in aid of helping our HIV programs. The government has been talking about $2.8 billion being the shortfall, but it's far more complicated. And as you could hear from the work that HERO has been doing, there are other things that we have not factored into that $2.8 billion. And the big question is, who and how are we going to plug this gap?
Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.